Well, you're very welcome to yet another podcast. Ivan and James Martin, our guest today, the irrepressible Peter Corey. Peter, the man of many talents, and he's done it all. Performer, producer, director, mentor of young talent. He's been there, he's done it, around the world. And for whatever reason, Peter, the thing that always sticks in my mind was Les Mis doing that, because it was such a big show when you did it. I mean, it was really at the top of the crest of the wave, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. It's still a show that, I mean, it keeps coming up in my life from time to time. That was 20 years ago I was in it, but there last year I did a youth production of it with about 80 young people, and the effect that show has is still obvious to the audience and those that are in the cast. It just really hits the mark in an emotional way and in so many other ways, you know.
And so many great songs.
Yeah. Yeah, it's packed full of big, big numbers, and the show has a lot of heart, and it's based on a story which has characters that in some shape or form we can connect with at least one of them, you know.
Yeah, and it's the sort of show I would imagine where there are songs when you know you're doing it, you think, oh, I'll get a chance to sing this one again. I love doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I always say I did over 1,000 performances in the one role, and my personality is that I'm always looking for the next thing and moving on and driving on and trying something new and different. And I can't think of any other show that I would have done 1,000 performances in and still gone on every night and got a buzz about doing that and singing those songs and being in those scenes.
Peter, I remember years ago, you might be better with numbers than me, but I was over in Bristol doing an interview with Van Morrison. And I spent the morning, about 4 hours with him, and we had lunch. And they were taking the order for lunch, and he ordered whatever he was having. And I ordered something, and he said to the girl, "Hold on a minute, dear." And he said, "Ivan, I'll have the steak sandwich with the caramelized onions." So, right, thank you. And off she goes. He said to me, "I had what you ordered last week, and it was crap." So, you know, and I must say, the steak sandwich was gorgeous, but I finish with Van about 2. I'm flying home at 7:30. And I knew you were in Bristol doing a show. And I rang you and you said, "There's no matinee." And we hooked up and spent the afternoon.
Yes, I remember. It was Bristol. It was Les Mis. You met him in the Swallow Hotel, which was across the road from the Hippodrome, which is where the show was on. Yeah.
Yeah. Brilliant. Yeah. And you just said, I said, "Thanks for hooking up at such short notice." And you said, "Just delighted to see somebody from home." You know, so
It can get like that if you're on the road for a long time. I mean, you do. Oh, gosh, I remember, it's a silly thing. Like, I remember being in the Netherlands doing a tour, and we went into Utrecht. I found a shop that sold potato, cheese, and onion crisps. And I mean, you know what that's like, you know, and just
As you do.
But me and the rest of the guys with me, we all bought packets of potato, cheese, and onion, which we probably wouldn't do at home, but it just made you feel like, you know, piece of home again.
Yeah, it does. Talking of the Netherlands, I mean, you're absolutely huge over there, aren't you?
It just seems to have, well, I go over most years now, I tour most years, and it just sort of is one of those things that opened up when I came home in 2001 from the West End. I got an invite to go out as a guest soloist with a tour that was going out to Germany and Holland. And when I was in Holland, the promoter said to me, "Look, I have an idea for a show next year. I'd love you to be in it." So put the show together and it went well. And from that, it just kept going and going and going. And I was out earlier, towards the end of last year. again. So that's been, what, 22 years now, going back and forward there, most years.
Time flies, doesn't it?
Too quickly, James.
Yeah. We're particularly tuned into that today because the day we're doing this is James's birthday. Happy Do you birthday. Want to say what he is, you are?
Let's put it this way. It's not a long time since I was two.
30 years.
I'm 32 today.
Congratulations.
Thank you, thanks. So,
looking at the way you've managed to spread your wings. You started off here. You were part-time. How did you really sort of get into it all?
I was doing like a normal job. I was a civil servant and I was doing singing in a rock band and I got into the sort of musical societies over here. And literally a friend of mine came in to work one day and said, look, they're doing a TV talent show. You should go for it. We call Go For It. And it was an RTBBC thing and I put in for it. And lo and behold, 3 or 4 months later, I ended up winning it, you know. And literally from that, the next day, the phone rang and it was an agent in London who said, I want you to fly over to meet me. I want to represent you. And it all came from that. And very quickly, doing auditions for shows and things were moving forward. That was it.
You're bringing me back here because am I right in thinking that show Go For It was the late great Harry Adair?
Yes.
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 Wonderful man.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Harry had me in as a judge a couple of times on it. And I remember doing it and somebody said, you seem very keen on saying, where are these people going to work afterwards?
Yeah.
And I said, well, I reckon they're pretty keen to know that as well, you know. But you're living proof that, you know, there's always a stepping stone and it may not be the one you thought.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And I was asked recently about the talent shows that are very different that are on TV these days, and the X Factors and things like that. And I think the big difference between when I did it and now is back then, these programs were genuinely looking for talent. They were looking for to give somebody an opportunity. Whereas now, they're really making a TV program. And the drama they can get out of that is more important to the talent that they have on the screen. And I think that's obvious, by the way. Nothing was promised to me after this talent show, Go For It. Nothing. I got a crystal dish and an amount of money, and that was basically what. But that was like a door being opened. It was up to me to get through that door and where it took me. But I think the thing now with these talent shows that are happening is that there needs to be proper counselling and proper support for young, especially the younger people, but everybody who does it, and what's maybe promised to them, and where it can lead, and where it possibly doesn't lead. And I just worry about that.
On the other side of it, Peter, the people who enter the shows now, in your time, you go into this show, your friend says, Peter, you should go for this.
Yeah.
Because it could be an opening to a career. Mm. You were looking for a career.
Yes.
People who take part nowadays, in my view, are more interested in being famous than having a career.
Yeah, I don't know if that's their fault. I think that's just where we all are.
Yeah.
I think, and unfortunately, you know, sometimes now I hear that young people going for jobs in West End shows, they want to know how many followers you have on Instagram, and that's taken into account whether you get the part or not.
Yeah.
It's just where we are. It's unfortunate. But at the end of it, there are people and people who... The thing about a performer, you know, James, is that when you're performing, it's so hard not to take things personally because the product you're selling is you.
Yeah.
You know, it's different than if you're representing something else. You're representing yourself. And it's very hard not to take the knockbacks personally, but it's important that we're all reminded that that's the way it is.
But is that an interesting thing in that if you're in a show like Les Mis, the show is selling the show.
Yeah.
And people will say, oh, Peter Corey was really good in Les Mis. But that thing of there, it's almost like you're cocooned a bit when it's a successful show and you know there's that comfort blanket.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, there's no doubt over the last 40, 50 years that musicals have changed as far as it's the title of the show, which is the star.
Yeah.
There is the odd occasion when the name is above the title, but generally it's the show that is the star, which in a way makes it easier for those in it. It takes a bit of pressure off, but it's harder to become a star within musical theatre because of that. We can all think of four or five names maybe in musical theatre that we know who they are, but not really. And then
only think of three.
Yeah.
Michael Ball, yeah. Peter Corey, and Elaine Page.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm sure if I thought about it, but that's off the top of my head, you know.
Yeah, and there you go. I mean, it's just the way musicals work, and that in a way it makes it so much easier as a promoter or producer, because you don't have to pay the big bucks necessarily, but it's just and it's where the industry is. But there are occasions. I mean, Rachel Tucker, who's come from here as well.
Yeah.
Rachel's done a fantastic job, and she's at the top of her game within musical theatre now, and flying the flag for Northern Ireland. You know, internationally with musical theatre.
I mean, Rachel, I saw Rachel singing when she was about 12.
Yeah.
You know, and your father, who was a stalwart of the local cabaret scene.
Yeah.
But she came along and I thought, this wee girl isn't going to end up singing I Only Want to Be With You to 120 people for the rest of her life.
Yeah.
She has got whatever that X factor is, she had it. And I'm so pleased that she has done well in the West End, and she is now, she's in that raft elite, of artists.
She's
artist,
in that elite group. She's
isn't seen she?
Yes, she is. And rightly so.
Yeah.
But like the rest who are in that group, she works hard.
Yeah. But it is.
It's hard work.
I mean, the number of, it used to be a matinee was once a week or maybe twice, Wednesday, Saturday.
Yeah.
Now there's it's two shows a day, nearly every day.
It depends on the show, but sometimes there are, Yeah, I remember seeing Rachel when she was young. I was younger as well. I think it was at John Lennon's birthday party. Yeah.
Oh, been a quiet evening.
Was there any acting to be done?
What?
Was there any acting to be done?
Yes. But she, even then, you just thought, that there's a real energy and talent there, which is fabulous.
Yeah. And it's lovely to see that coming through, which brings us round to one of the other strings to your bow, where you're really mentoring young emerging talent as creative director at the
BSPA, Belfast School of Performing Arts.
Yeah.
I was approached about 6.5 years ago by Tina, who owns the company, and she said, look, would you come on board as the artistic director? And it was just the right timing, because I was about to look at doing my own school, and I'd been directing summer projects up at Theatre at the Mill and Edinburgh Playhouse and things like that. So it was something I thoroughly enjoyed, and this came at the perfect time. So for the last 6.5 years, I've been doing that, and I mean, it's been such a pleasure. And BSPA does two things. We've nearly 1,000 pupils now, which is amazing, with 10 schools throughout NI. And we obviously, there is the opportunity there for those who want to take it further and possibly look at a career and have the ability to do that. And we help them find their way through that. But just as important as finding that next generation in the profession is that what it gives to all the young people who go there is self-belief and confidence. And that's what I think performing on stage can do. It gives you an opportunity to express yourself. It also gives you the tools in life which you can use in many different jobs. And just the ability to stand up in a room and communicate with other people is so important for us all. And so it does that as well, which is great.
I take it that's not just been really great as an actor's point of view, but if we take any schools now, they all want to be actors and they all want to go into, you know, shows here in Northern Ireland, never mind about the West End. But it's always nice when you have bigger communities to go into that.
James, that's a good point. That's the other thing I would say, and I was looking at a news article this morning about something, and it was relation to something else, but it was exactly the title I used. It's about finding your tribe.
Mm-hmm.
It's about finding the group of people you belong with, and young people who, a lot of those who perform, not just with BSPA, but with a lot of performing arts schools, they have found their tribe. They go there on a Saturday or a night during the week, and they feel comfortable in that group environment. Sometimes they don't get that at school, and sometimes these places are the places where they feel they belong, and they're with people who understand what makes them tick, because it makes them tick as well.
You see, that's why that I became an actor for a reason.
Yeah.
Because it's always nice to have not just that community, but also when you have something like maybe your first show or maybe a different show, and it just comes to you as just like that.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's the same, both of you.
Yes, know. It is. I mean, if you do a show, and what I like to see with all these students, the way that when I came to see the first night of An Irish Goodbye, you had your friends there to support you.
Mm-hmm.
A lot within these performing groups as well support each other. And they're there to cheer each other on. And it's a good support group to have, and a good way to release your passion for something. And if it's what makes you tick, the same way as Arsenal makes somebody in this house tick. Who is that?
That's Daniel, our younger son.
Right, Daniel. The same way as football makes... The same way as, you know, some people love sport, you know, theatre does it for others.
Yeah. I mean, did you find, James, that once you had been in a show that you couldn't wait to do the next one?
Again, you have to, like, it's like everything. It's like when you love any directors, Then make get, you know, like a clip or maybe you go up in front of a camera and audition for a particular part. It's not even like that now. It's all, you know, I think that's just a different part that we do. And I think that's probably why when you have a full showing, not just ups and downs, but if we take an Irish Goodbye, which does a really nice feeling, make people laugh. And I'm sure that was the case for you as well, with your shows.
Well, James, going back to when you were making An Irish Goodbye, the other thing about BSPA is there's a great group of professional teachers, drama teachers, dancers, music teachers, and, you know, the rest of the structure. And one of my drama teachers in BSPA was Ross White, who was the co-director. And Ross was coming into BSPA and saying, "Oh, Peter, I'm freezing. We were up the country all week and we were filming." And then he said, "You were in it and Paddy Jenkins was in it." So I would I would get regular updates about how it was all going. And sorry, I forgot the question. but there's a network of people around you. And after you've done your first one, I've never acted on camera, so I've never done anything like a movie or TV, which has never happened. I've never had that opportunity. But can I ask you, I mean, when you were doing An Irish Goodbye, did it feel this is something a wee bit special, or you just don't know?
Well, because we did in COVID and lockdown, and we want people to laugh, because, you know, when you see on TV, there's always repeats and stuff like that, and they were bored. Yeah. And I think that's why with An Irish Goodbye coming in, it's always lovely when you see people laugh. Because if we don't make people laugh, you're going to be all that same fellow again, you know, really. But it's not really like that.
And did you guys have a laugh when you were doing it?
Oh, you just have to be on set. It was just fantastic. The Quick was good. The, I mean, make beautiful play to the lads, you know, like Alexa Walsh, you know, he was just so funny, Matt, he found me,
yeah.
Through my dad, actually, and the next minute he walked ups and downs Marcella, and it was actually really lovely just to do it.
Yeah.
You know, really.
Yeah, Ross is great, apart from the fact he's a Liverpool man, it's all fine.
That's not what that against him, but I think it was really nice. Yeah. But no, his dream did come true, though.
Yeah.
When we were going to the Oscars, and he got a video call from Klopp and said, well, we've got another Oscar waiting for you, and that was the Bill...
Shankly?
Yeah,
yeah.
Bill Shankly thing.
Yeah.
And he says, I have never in my life got that trophy, you know, really. And I was like, well, we'll play to you.
Yeah.
You know, because it is a great family, a great opportunity. Yeah. But I'm sure that was like a really different ball game when he came back to show the Oscar off to the guys in the PSP.
But
you know, really.
If you think as well, you know. James, the football family here, the reaction they had to you winning the Oscar.
Mm.
Again, it was just really lovely. Yeah, I think the reaction was that because I've been going to the football a lifetime with my dad, and it was really nice just to see a friend going up on a day. On the day of my birthday, it was actually really nice. But it's amazing how when you see people, not just winning an Oscar, but I'm sure that Ross was so happy and delighted about it, and he bring it back home to show the guys, you know, really.
Well, James,
you know.
The two, he taught in two schools for us, and those pupils will always remember their drama teacher won an Oscar, you know, and he brought it in, and he still pops in to see them and how they're getting on, and still the connection, and it's amazing for them to see what they can achieve by the likes of you and Ross and what you've done, you know.
I'm sure that feeling was fantastic for those kids just to see Ross and the Oscar, but I'm sure that it's like likes of me. It's kind of like it's first life, it's common, never mind.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that was a different ballgame just for you, you know.
What do you mean?
I mean, like, when you walk into a room and they say, oh, that's Peter Corey, you know, and they get really excited, you know. I'm sure that's the same thing as you.
Oh, well, you know? I don't know about that. Well, my mum gets excited when I come to visit. I think that's the best I can say. But within the schools, when I pop in, it's nice. There's a nice connection there with me. And when I go in, and it's just great to step in and see what's going on and what the teachers and the pupils are up to, and the shows they're all working on. Because they're all working on a show at the moment, which they'll put on Stramulus Theatre. So that's the period when at the moment. So it's hard work for them.
I'm sure. I mean, it's like all that preparation, all that, you know, going out there and performing it. But I'm sure that's just like a nice thing to have.
Mm.
But the likes of doing it for a Mumble Sander point of view,
yeah,
it's just going to be amazing.
Yeah, I think so.
The range of shows that you have done, we've talked a lot about Les Mis, but it wasn't the only show you did. I mean, you've done the Sweeney Todd.
Yeah.
And the Cozy Fantudi. Yeah. You did that. I mean, that's, most people would be going, oh, I was on Cozy Fantudi. You know what I mean? Like, no crap.
That was was the first show I went into after... After I went over to London and I turned professional, it was Cozy Fantudi. It was out in Hamburg and then in London. And not the route, as you say, not the route you think you're going to take, because I never trained as an opera singer, so it was like a real jolt to be offered that. They used sort of more musical theatre singers, and indeed the size of voices that would have been appropriate for when Mozart wrote Così fan tutte wasn't the opera singers you hear now.
Yeah.
It was a smaller voice. So it all worked well, but there was a lot of humour in that. And that's the other thing. I have had a great experience of travelling around the world performing as well and gone to places to do that. And that has been a great experience to meet people from all over the place as well.
But what's that feeling like? I know that I've met a lot of people in my time, but both you feeling like when you meet all these guys, both you be acting to it all?
Well, I think what it always brings home, no matter where you go, is how strong music is wherever you are in the world and how much it connects people, no matter what the music is. I mean, take the song Danny Boy, for example. I've sung it in Russia and China. And the tune is known in China, which is amazing. You know, it really is that they even know it. I remember being on tour in China, and after the first show one night, the Chinese producer, it was Inner Mongolia we were in at the time, which is huge, a huge area. And we got on the bus to go to the hotel, and he said, "Can I have a word, Peter?" He says, "I'd like you to sing another song tomorrow night." And I thought it was going to be, "Would you sing another Irish song?" He said, "Would you learn this song and sing it?" And it was a Chinese song, and I sat up and phonetically learned the song, and the next night sat on stage to sing it and started the first few words, and the place erupted. And it is that common thing of a performer going to another country and trying their best to acknowledge where they are.
And embrace it.
Yeah. And it's a lesson. I learned a lesson on that night. And I mean, the place erupted, and the rest of the tour, everywhere we went when I performed that, it just is a connection. It's a connection with you and the 5,000 people that were in the theatre, you know.
Yeah. It's a fantastic thing, isn't it?
It is. It's, I mean, you just couldn't plan it. I mean, it's just a fantastic thing to have, but I mean, if it wasn't Tom putting it out there in the first place, it was actually really nice, really. But I'm sure when you got your MBE, what was that connection like?
That was great. I got sort of the word about that. It was about May last year, and then you sort of keep quiet for another 6 weeks after that happens, and it was exciting. My wife phoned me and said, you got a letter, it looks official, do you want me to open it? I said, yeah. And she said, oh, just to let you know. So that was nice. That was really good. And going over to the Palace in November to get it was something that when it's coming up, did you go, yeah, that'll be great, but the actual day itself, they do it very well, and to be there with my family and to have friends from London to meet up with us afterwards, and it's just a nice acknowledgement.
Yeah,
it's a nice thing.
Yeah. Well, we're still waiting to hear for James. Yeah. They've gone as far as telling us it'll be either Buckingham Palace or Windsor Castle.
Yes,
and they have said they will give us a minimum of 6 weeks' notice.
Yes.
So it's interesting for James to find.
James, you, when were you, New Year?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I've another friend of mine, Ashley, he got it, and he's in, I think he's over next month. So they're probably.
What's his surname?
Ashley Fulton.
Yeah. They do it alphabetically, apparently.
Yeah, right, okay.
So Pammy Ballantyne tells me.
Well, Pamela, I think, is over in the same one as him.
Yeah.
So look, you will have a fantastic day. You really will, and it'll be something to remember.
Well, that's really nice if you to say that, because I'm going to bring my family too.
Yeah.
It's a not a nice memory, but it's kind of like a holiday. Get it done and stuff like that, and you know, I just hope it's a nice day.
Yeah, yeah. Well, mine wasn't. The weather was pouring down, but
did you have to wear a morning suit?
No, I quite. Can I just mention? The odd time I go and get a girl called Patricia Grogan, who has a place in Belfast, The Cut, and I went in to speak to her about what to wear, and I thought I'd rather have got something that I could then wear on stage afterwards, because you know, yeah. I thought, right, if I get a morning suit, it ain't going to be worn again.
No.
So I, she said, Peter, go for a double-breasted velvet jacket. And I went, no, double-breasted, no. She went, no, no, go. And she was bang on. It is, it's one of those things, I said, when I go on stage, I like a nice suit because the older you get, the more you have to get it cut better.
Yeah.
But also, the better you walk on stage for a concert feeling about yourself, feeling about, the better, you know, it, yeah. it just helps you as a performer. It's something simple as that, but it's it, what you did was fabulous.
Let me give you two words in terms of feeling better.
Yes.
Tony Bennett.
Yes.
Tony Bennett always looked like they invented the double-breasted suit for him, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, like Tony Bennett.
I know.
What a performer. Yeah.
And always looked meticulous.
He did.
Yeah.
You know, incredible. Can I ask you about Andrew Lloyd Webber, right? I've never met him.
Yes.
Right, I've met Tim Rice a few times.
Yeah.
Never met Andrew Lloyd Webber. I have a soft spot for eccentrics.
Yeah.
And he strikes me as being perhaps a bit eccentric. Would I be wide of the mark?
No, I think you're pretty close. I think you're pretty close. I think as he's got older, he's got slightly more, how can I put this? Not eccentric. We see it more.
Yeah,
we just see it more, and he's embracing it maybe more. But I think he's more likable for it.
Yeah,
I think it, you know, he endears himself.
Yes, to
people because of it. You know?
He does. Yeah. Yeah, very much so.
And he's passionate. He's passionate about what he does, and he cares about it, which is good.
We're friendly with a girl called Christina Bennington.
Yes,
you know Christina.
No, off Christina,
right?
Yeah.
Christina's brother and Daniel, the Arsenal supporter, our best buds, went to school together. But Christina was telling me she got the female lead in Bat Out of Hell in the West End.
Yeah.
And she ended up doing it on Broadway as well. Yeah. But she said to me, this phone call from my agent saying, do you know who Andrew Lloyd Webber is? So I said, of course I know who he is. Well, he's phoned, he's bought another theatre and he wants to use it as a workshop space to give a platform to new writers and new productions.
Yes.
But he's starting off doing this show with songs from some of his shows, and he has asked for, would you like to do it? And she said, and you didn't say yes. And she said, well, I thought I would run it past you. And she said, phone him back now and tell him, of course, I'll do it.
Yeah,
you know. Yeah. And she did it, and she said, he was in the middle of it all doing this and that, and a thoroughly enjoyable and experience.
Hands on. It's funny you're saying there. Weirdly, I don't know why I thought about this the other day. I would just think, I never met, so you said about the Bat Out of Hell musical.
Yeah.
I never met Jim Steinman, who wrote the Bat Out of Hell
music
and all those albums. And I wish I'd have met him, because I would have wanted to tell him that his music had such a huge impact on me as a teen. You know, as a teenager, you fall into different styles.
I mean,
I loved Meatloaf, but I loved the theatre of it, I think.
Yes.
And it was really Jim Steinman that was the talent behind that, you know.
I've met Meatloaf.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
He was doing the Ulster Hall.
Uh-huh.
Right? And I went down to interview him, and they did the band call.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, I'm all yours, Ivan. Let's go.
Yeah.
And we're actually on the stage of the Ulster Hall talking. And they start putting up these crash barriers, metal crash barriers. And he says, excuse me, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
And they said, I can see what they are. Why are they there?
Yeah.
And they said, it's so that the audience don't surge forward. And he said, you leave those there, kids will get crushed. Take them away.
Yeah.
And the guy said, above my pay grade. So yeah. They get the guys in charge of the hall, uh-huh. Bring them out. And he says to Meatloaf, basically, rules is rules. We need cross barriers, no discussion. He said, Ivan, will you walk with me here? You come. And he walks out to the front door. He shakes hands with all the bouncers, door staff, and says, could you open the door a moment? And he said, if we do, the crowd will see you and they'll all surge forward. He said, I'll only be out there for 20 seconds. If some of your guys could come with me.
Yeah.
Sure. So they walk out and he turns around to the guys on the hall and he says, no discussion. Whose name's on this? Yeah. And they said, what do you mean whose name's on? Whose name? Meatloaf. Good. No discussion. No barriers or no show. Ivan, and off we go.
Wow.
You know, larger than life, lovely guy, couldn't do enough for you.
Yeah.
Just a nice guy and electric on stage.
Yeah.
You know?
Pure theatre. I mean, it was.
Pure theatre.
The first rock gig I went to was at the Antrim Forum, was Meatloaf.
Yes.
And the last number was like the whole band, including him, the backing singer, all playing electric guitars, 13 guitarists along the front of the stage. Yeah. And, you know. Yes. Turned it up to 11.
I was well, one of them. I was one of them. They gave me a guitar and said, on
did
you
they?
Go.
Did
yeah,
they?
Yeah.
Oh.
Gary Mills oh, and myself.
Dear. Wow. Dear
and, you know, Andrum Forum. Yeah. I'd forgotten about that.
There you go.
So, what's in store for the rest of the year?
The rest of the year, we're just in the middle of a tour called Thank You for the Musicals, which is going very well. We've two more dates for that coming up. And then my production company, Peter Carr Productions, we do a lot of corporate work, sort of bespoke entertainment for different companies and different events. And we've a few of those coming up for the next few months. So that's interesting and good fun. It's good fun because you get to put the ideas together and you get budgets to do it with, and you can do something really exciting and interesting. And like last year, we did a lovely, lovely night down at Bushmills Distillery for the opening of the new distillery. That was a great one. And we did another one at the St. Anne's Cathedral, which is where our Christmas show annually is. But we had an event there for a jewellers and really top quality corporate entertainment, which is just very exciting. You know,
yeah. Good. James was just saying to me yesterday that when he and Daniel were children, our Christmas would never have been complete without the music box at the waterfront.
Yeah, gosh, 10 years we did the music box.
Yeah.
10 years?
10 years, 10 years.
Gosh, Tim really does play.
Yes.
I'm sure that the music box is just amazing how that you can grow and grow with it all, you know.
Well, James, you know what's really good about the likes of the music box and even the early youth productions that I did, that a lot of the young people who were in those shows, some of them are now professionals, some of them are now at BSPA as teachers, and to
yes.
To see the journey so far with that is great. And there's a lot of them who were in the music box, and still people come up to me today and said, you know, I was in the music box, my school choir was singing at it, and because we had hundreds every year, hundreds of performers on stage with that, and that was a huge exercise to do every year. So after 10 years, we just were running out of the time required to do that, so we decided to move across to do a thing called Christmas at the Cathedral, which is at St. Anne's every year. And actually, with Rachel Tucker was our special guest last year, and so that's, it's much more, it takes up less time to sort it out. The music box was like so big, but an enjoyable thing to do.
I remember our friend, I was going to say our old friend, but he wouldn't have thanked me for it. But our friend Ian McElhenney did it one year when they were wee, and there's Ian.
Yeah, well, Ian's done it a couple of years now.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ian and I met years ago on a thing called On Eagle's Wing, which he directed and I was
yes.
in, and we've been in touch ever since. And yes, Ian's always good fun to have on stage.
If we had the length of another program,
yeah.
we could do one on Eagle's Wing. The great, you know, if the nearly man of musicals.
Oh, I think there's an attempt. I think it's maybe supposedly happening again under a slightly different name. So fingers crossed for them. I hope that works out for
you. I wish them nothing but well.
I know.
You know.
A lot of potential in that show. But it's a good example of how it's not just important to have a good show, which you need to have all the other elements and have that element of luck. And hopefully next year they'll get that element of luck when they take it out.
Well, continued good luck to you. It's lovely to talk to you, and thanks for coming.
Thanks again.
Mm-hmm. Just one more thing. Can say to your brother, the Arsenal supporter, right? Say to him that I would really like them to win the Premiership this year, because I'd, as opposed to City or Liverpool, I think I'd rather have Arsenal win.
Well, I always say there's nothing like finishing on a backhanded compliment. Thanks, Peter.
Cheers.
Thanks, Peter.